tuned in to the Community Cats Podcast. Ready? Let's go.
Hi, everyone. This is Kristen. I am the technical tabby here at the Community Cats Podcast, and I am here to welcome you back and thank you for tuning in to this special presentation of Targeted TNR, Getting the Most Bang for Your Buck. If you listen to part one, you already know that we've covered the why behind targeted TNR, why it works, why it matters, and why focusing your efforts can make such a dramatic difference on the ground. Today, we're shifting into the how. In this episode, Brian Cordes from Neighborhood Cats walks us through the practical steps of putting a targeted TNR strategy into action. You'll hear how to use real data, like shelter intake numbers, complaint calls, and what you're learning directly from the community, to go ahead and figure out exactly where your efforts will have the biggest impact. Brian also shares guidance on structuring outreach from simple tools like yard signs and door knocking to navigating trickier situations like reluctant caretakers or discovering that there's way more cats than you expected. This session digs into the nuts and bolts, spatial continuity, micro-targeting, setting realistic sterilization goals, and how to measure success over time, whether that's fewer complaints, reduced intake, or actual changes in the outdoor cat population, or really all of the above. Whether you're working on a citywide initiative, or you're focusing on one neighborhood, or even just one block, this episode offers clear, actionable steps to help you design a more effective, efficient TNR campaign. So with that, let's jump into part two of Targeted TNR, Getting the Most Bang for Your Buck, with Brian Cordes.
Welcome back, everybody. On the second half of today, I'm going to go into some of the nuts and bolts. So when it comes to targeting, really one of the first questions you're going to have is, you know, how do I identify where to target? And that's where data is really useful. So you can look at, if we're looking for like, where are the most, because let me take a step back. In our Farrellville hypothetical, initially, you'll notice that we had the distribution of cats as like 25 per zip code, evenly divided throughout Farrellville. But the reality is, in most communities, it's not evenly distributed. And there'll be one zip code, like you see in this hypothetical, zip code number 3, where there's a much higher concentration of free roaming cats that are unaltered than there are in the rest of the community. And if we want to try to identify that area and to, you know, make that the target, one of the ways to do it is by looking at data. So you can look at intake into local shelters broken down by where the cats came from, right? That's now, none of these are perfect. So you may have the most cats in an area that's really far from the shelter and people don't travel to bring the cats there. So it's not a perfect barometer, but it can give you pretty strong clues. You can also look at complaint calls or requests for assistance by location. That's why I encourage any group that's doing trap, neuter, return, whether you're doing, you know, 500 surgeries a year or 2,000, to track your calls by location. And then you'll have data that will help you identify areas of high need. Don't have to be complaints. They can be requests for help, anything related to cats. There's also finally what I call tribal knowledge. And that's the experience of people who've been working in the community for some period of time. So your animal control officers, your rescuers who've been around for 15 years, people running the shelter, they're going to just know off the top of their head where problem areas are in the community. And also note that I want to mention at this point, you know, there can be different goals for doing targeting. So for example, I mean, the common goal is to reduce the number of cats in the community, the number of unowned, unaltered, free-roaming cats. But some communities, you know, or some of your projects, you may have different goals. You may want to just try to reduce complaint calls, for example. You may just want to focus on intake and not so much how many cats are. You just want fewer cats coming into the shelter, which doesn't necessarily mean fewer cats in the community, but that's your goal. Is the euthanasia rate's too high? You want to prevent more unadoptable cats from potentially coming into the shelter. In that case, the data you rely on could be much more specific. So if you're trying to lower intake, then you're going to look at intake as your criteria for selecting a target area. If you're trying to reduce calls, you would look at calls. And often these things are related. If you reduce the number of cats, you often reduce intake and you reduce complaints at the same time, but they're not necessarily directly related. So one of the things you have to do when you're selecting a target area is to decide what is your goal? What is it you're seeking to accomplish? And then rely on the data that is most directly related to that. Once you have that information, like let's say we're talking about intake and we have a spreadsheet of where the cats came from, you can map it like you see here. You can plug the data into Google Maps, for example, or you can go online and there are programs that will allow you to drop an Excel spreadsheet in and then map all the data points on your spreadsheet. And they may have like a monthly subscription thing, but you could just sign up for 1 month and get it done. There was one called Batch Geo, BATCHGEO, but I'm not sure if they're still out there. Microsoft used to have something called MapPoint, but I don't think they have that anymore. But there are programs out there if you just do a quick Google search. And here you see, for example, there's a hypothetical in New York City again, where we've mapped out intake into the local shelter, and we're looking for a target area. So when we look at this series of data points, we can see there's a relatively high concentration in that area in the red circle. So we could decide that's the area of high need. That's where the most cats are. So that's where we're going to have the most impact with the surgeries available to us. Now, other clues have to do with the relationship between cat populations and poverty levels. And this was a study that was done by Dr. Gary Petron back in 2010. And the map on the left is, this is Boston, broken up into its different sections and towns. And the map on the left shows cat intake, and the orange is the highest. Now, the map on the right I created, that was income level in Boston about the same time. And the orange and the red are the highest, I should say, are the lowest income levels. And in this study, what Dr. Petronic used was not income levels. She correlated cat intake to premature human mortality, so people dying younger. And he used that as a proxy for poverty, whereas I'm using income level. But they pretty much correlated directly. And you can see how the areas with the highest cat intake are almost exactly the same as the areas with the highest poverty levels, which were the areas with the lowest, the highest premature human mortality rates. So we know from this research, and just as a matter of experience working in many communities for myself, that the poorer areas of our communities tend to have the highest free-roaming cat populations. That has to do with lack of, you have veterinary deserts, you have people struggling with many things besides cats, so they're not high on the priority list. So there's a number of reasons for that. But for us, when we're trying to choose where to go, that ends up being a good clue. So between data and income levels, you can and tribal knowledge, you should be able to identify the areas of high need in your community. So then we get to the question of, so when we're doing, like I say, we want to get high sterilization rates within target areas. But in order to know if you're at a high sterilization rate, you have to have some idea of how many cats are there in the first place. So this is based on my experience over many years of overseeing targeted projects. This is more art than science, I warn you. But what happened was when I was working for PetSmart Charities and we were doing targeted TNR grants, we required that if you wanted a grant, you had to fix a substantial percentage of the cats in your target area. So we had to give guidance on how to figure out how many there were. And we started off telling people to divide the human population by 6. And this was based on some research that Dr. Levy had done in Florida, where she did cat counting and compared it to population size. What we found was that people kept running out of cats. So I started to conclude that, well, you know, something's off here. There must be some overestimation. And when I went into the research that Dr. Levy had done, in my opinion, there was a fair amount of double counting, because they counted cats who were fed daily, cats who were fed like once a week, and cats who were just fed once in a while. And in reality, those populations probably were quite a bit of overlap. So treating them all as separately meant that the same cat might have been counted 3-4 times. So my conclusion was, if you only counted the cats who were fed daily, you ended up with a formula that said divide the human population by 15. So still error in there, but not as much maybe. Now, this is just a starting point. You would take your human population in the target area, divide it by 15. But if you're in a rural area where there's more ground space or a warmer climate where more kittens are going to survive, and if no prior TNR has been done, you may have more than what that formula gives you. On the other hand, if you're in an urban area where there's a lot less ground space and the climate's very cold and you have a strong winter and there's been a lot of prior TNR work, well, then you're probably going to have a lot less. So you would have to start by dividing the human population by 15 and then just make adjustments which make sense to you. And understand that you're not trying to get an exact count. You won't be able to do that using this method, but it will get you into the ballpark. It will get you somewhat a good starting point, and that's all you need at this point. So once you've, and again, make adjustments that make sense to you. You know, if you end up with a number that's like, wow, that's just, it can't possibly be that high, then adjust it down. So how many surgeries are you going to do to target effectively? The language that I've always used is substantial percentage. And that's vague on purpose, because the number we're starting with, our estimate of the number of cats, is vague, right? So to say it needs to be some precise percentage of a very rough estimate doesn't really make much sense. So I would say aim for 50% or above of your estimated population, and then proceed, as we've discussed today, a colony at a time, getting as close to 100% as possible at each. That will get you well down the road. And during these projects, often adjustments have to be made, as we'll talk about. But this will get you started, and and if you proceed in this manner and you overestimated the number of cats, well, then you'll have surgeries left over that you can go to the area next to your target area. If you didn't get enough, well, then because you're proceeding methodically within the area that you could get to, you'll have gotten a high percentage. So what if you identify zip code number 3 as your area of highest need? And you do this calculation and you realize, like, wow, we don't have enough surgeries to get a high percentage of the cats in zip code number 3 fixed. We can get a couple of colonies close to 100%, but there's kind of no way we're going to get, you know, anywhere near 100% of all the cats in zip code number 3. Do you give up at that point or just say targeting's not for me? What would you do? If the question for you guys, what would you do if you were in this situation? We don't have enough surgeries for the area that you decided is the highest need. Any thoughts on that? Move to a lower need area. Well, there you go. Charlotte got it right. Take your surgeries and go somewhere where they are a higher. Well, you will be able to get a high percent, a substantial percentage. Zip code number 1, right? Christine Perron got it correct too. There, your surgeries will get you, 80% or something like 3, 7, 10. You'll have gotten 10 out of 12, or what is it? 10, whatever it is, 10 out of 12. So you'll be a very high percentage. And, maybe in time you start to divide up zip code 3 into smaller sections. We have a group in Jersey City, New Jersey, who moves block by block through and constantly are expanding the target area that they're within. So they just bite off smaller pieces at a time. But you can also go to zip code 1 and have a good impact, a strong impact there. So my point being that no matter what size your program is and how many surgeries you have available, you can target, you can maximize the effectiveness of the resources that you have, whether you've got 10 or whether you've got 100 surgeries. Now, how do you do targeting? How do you find the cats? There's generally what I call a three-step process. And the first is what I call general media. So, you know, you're putting posts on your Facebook page, looking for cats and caretakers. You put it on your website. You might do a TV interview or get it in the press somehow. This is general media. This is going to broadcast in your target area and well beyond. This is a good reason why it's important not to put all your resources into targeting, because you're going to get requests for help from other areas and you want to be able to offer something, even if it's training and traps or some colonies, maybe if it's a high profile, like the mayor wants his backyard done. You know, you want to have the flexibility of going over there, and you don't want to tell people you're not in our target area and we have nothing for you. So you want to have some resources that are going into the community as a general, even if it's not as effective from a population control point of view, it's going to be effective from a TNR movement growth point of view. So put some resources into targeting, but not all. So eventually that general media is going to run dry and you're not going to get calls or cats. So then you would use what we call targeted media. So that's within the target area itself. Examples are billboards, yard signs, door hangers, flyers, postcard mailings, inserts into utility bills, which sometimes you can do for free. And that will get you a second wave of information and data. But do understand that eventually you're going to have to get to the third phase, which is boots on the ground. And that's being present in the target area. That could be door knocking. It could be walking around and talking to people. It could be tabling at a local event, community meetings, vaccine clinics, or wellness clinics, doing food or shelter giveaways. You need to, at some point, be integrated into the community so that they get to know you, so that they get to trust you. And once you break the ice, like once one caretaker trusts you and you TNR their colony, then they're going to tell you about the other feeder down the block, and it grows from there. But targeted projects fail when groups are not willing to move beyond the general media and they just put up Facebook posts. That works very well for non-targeted. Like we have 20 slots, the first 20 to get them. You'll definitely fill your slots very quickly, but you won't be able to target if that's what you rely on. At some point, you have to get boots on the ground. Also, you need to know your community so that your messaging is effective. You know, what's the income level? What type of media do people watch? What's the ethnicity? What language do they speak? If you're targeting an area where Vietnamese is the dominant language, then putting everything out in English isn't going to get you too far. What's the culture? Some religions and some cultures are initially hostile to spay neuter. So maybe you have to go through an education process about that first. Can you find, what businesses or residential areas would you want to target for messaging? And can you get the backing of local leaders and influencers who can go a long way towards building a trust? And here in this slide, you see a billboard that was used in that University of Tampa Bay project that I talked about earlier. While you're doing this messaging, you want to be gathering intelligence about the cats. So when I would walk around a neighborhood trying to figure out, you know, get the feel of the land and build support, I would ask all these questions of anybody who showed any interest in the cats. Like, number one is who's feeding them, right? Because it's hard to trap hungry cats if they're not hungry. So you need to coordinate with feeders. When and where are they fed? How many cats are there? What's the history of this place? Like the very first colony I worked on, I found out that, well, there were over 30 cats in this courtyard, but it had started 2 years earlier when two cats showed up and the owner of a local business started putting food out for them. And then he kept buying more and more food as the population rather rapidly grew, until it got to the point where he just kind of threw up his hands and said, I can't do anything, after he created this enormous mess. But that was very helpful because I knew, all right, well, this business is likes the cats. They just don't know what to do now that it's out of hand. And we were able to work with them and get access into the area and things like that. Also, what's the general attitude? Are people hostile to the cats because they consider them a nuisance? Are they protective? Is it both? And all these things will help you as you try to get information and move through and catch the cat.
When we launched the Community Cats podcast, our goal was simple: share stories and strategies to help cat lovers turn their passion into action. But something amazing happened. Our community grew, and so did our mission. Over the years, we've added webinars, conferences, certification courses, downloadable tools, and a whole lot more to support people who care about cats. So it's time for our name to reflect everything we do. The podcast isn't going anywhere, but our overall platform is rebranding as Community Cat Central. It's the same team, the same heart, and the same commitment, just with a fresh new look and even better ways to help you take action for cats in your community. You'll start seeing updates soon, including a brand new website, smarter email tools, and resources that are easier to access and use. We're so grateful to have you on this journey with us, and we can't wait to show you what's next. Want an easy grant opportunity for your animal organization? Maddie's Fund is giving away a $3,000 grant each month to one lucky Maddie's Pet Forum member. You'll automatically be entered to win each month when you start a new discussion, reply to a new post, or upload a new library resource. Learn more at forum.maddiesfund.org today. Tomahawk Live Trap exceeds customers' expectations by providing them with the highest quality humane animal control products available. Check out their new Pro Series Gravity Door Trap. They feature a door that sets automatically when you open it. No hook or plate setting needed. Use discount code KEEPITHUMANE for 10% off your order at livetrap.com.
Another big question that comes up about targeted project is who does the trapping and the field work. So I can tell you from long experience that if you are relying on the people in the target area, the residents and the caretakers to bring in the vast majority of the cats for spay and neuter, that will not work. You will get some motivated people. And so it's always good to ask and try to get people in the target area to do as much of the work as you possibly can. But there's going to be a lot of people, and I'm sure you guys who've done TNR for a while know this better than I do, that there are people who just want to feed and they won't take the time to trap, or they don't have the time to trap. You know, they may have very good reasons, or they're elderly and they can't. It's too physically demanding or whatever it is. But you can't, in a targeted project, say, well, we're not going to fix those cats because you won't bring them into us. You're not going to end up getting enough cats fixed. So you have to have your own people, your staff. It could be volunteers. It could be a partner group. A clinic can partner with a local TNR group. So get support from local residents and caretakers. But if that's what you're counting on, if you're counting on the caretakers bringing in all the cats and having that, then don't, you're not at a point where you can do an effective targeted project, except maybe on a smaller scale. So tracking impact kind of relates very closely to how do we identify where the areas of highest need are. So there are what we call direct outcomes, which is, let's say where our goal is to lower the number of cats in the community. Now, if our goal was simply to lower intake, then intake would be a direct outcome, right? Not an indirect one. But if we're talking about the number of cats actually on the ground, the only way to know that precisely is to literally count the cats, right? Which is a census. And it's important to note, because you're probably thinking like, that is absolutely impossible to do. It's not if you're doing what I call directional versus absolute. And let me explain those terms. So an absolute census would be like, you're working in a zip code, and let's say we know ahead of time somehow, because, you know, we got a divine message that there are 1,500 cats in this area. Or let's say we went out and we took camera traps, or we went block by block, and like they did in Tel Aviv, and they spent 3 years counting cats. And that's an absolute census. You know the absolute number of cats in that area. But a easier way to do a census is what's called directional. And that's where you don't know the absolute number of cats, but you can tell whether the population is going up or down or staying the same. And that's what's called transect walks, and which is a method that a lot of research studies use. And I think I mentioned this earlier, but I'll say it again. It's like if I was targeting a specific neighborhood and I was looking to do directional counts, not absolute counts, then I would say, all right, cats are usually out because in this neighborhood, they usually feed, like where I am in Hawaii, people feed at dusk or just as it gets dark because the birds all go to sleep and there's a lot of feral chickens and they'll eat all the cat food if you put it out during the day. So I would just, you know, an hour before dusk, I would plot a route, a walking path, maybe about a mile through the neighborhood that was being targeted. I would bring one or two people with me and we would literally walk that route and look for cats. And we would count how many we saw. We would try to note how many have ear tips. And if we could take photos of them, all the better. We'd end up with a number right at the end of the walk. In 3 months, we would come back after, or let's say after we did our targeting and we got a lot of the cats, as many as we could find fixed, then we would do the exact same walk at the same time of day with the same people counting, ideally, and we'd get another number. And if that number was, we did that a few times and we saw the numbers were on a downward trajectory, we wouldn't know exactly how many cats there are, but we would know the population was going down, which is the main point. So it can be done. If you're in a smaller situation like a mobile home park, it might, or university setting, or if you're confident that you're going colony by colony and you're getting all of them, by the end of your project, you'll have known exactly how many cats were there. Now, if you want to rely on indirect outcomes to try to give you a clue about the size of the cat population, whether it's going up or down, that's when you would rely on things like intake and complaint calls. I've seen groups track online kitten postings. So none of these are the indirect outcomes. You could have intake go down because the shelter reduced their hours, right? Or they used to have a drop-off box and now they don't. Or now they have more staff or less staff. So it's not a precise measurement of cat populations. But if you, you know, follow, if you track intake and complaint calls and you're looking at kitten postings and they're all going down, you know, you might not be able to publish that in a research paper, but you could probably feel pretty confident that you're having an impact on the number of cats out there. So why track? You know, why go through the trouble? Well, you want to know whether you're achieving your goals, right? Again, if your goal is lower intake, then that's pretty easy to measure. And you want to know that it's going up or going down or staying the same. And because if it's not working, then you can adapt. You can maybe try putting more trappers in there or spending more time or using different, maybe you need to use different trapping methods or things like that, or reach more caretakers. But if you are just completely in the dark, then you have no idea whether you're succeeding or not, and you don't have the ability to change while the project is going on. The other reason to track is because what are you going to do if you run out of cats? Let's say you've got 500 surgeries allocated to your target area, and you've gotten 300 of them fixed, and you can't find any more, right? So one of two things is happening at that point. Number one, you overestimated the number of cats, and there aren't as many as you thought, which is entirely possible because, like I say, we're doing very rough, educated guesses on how many cats are there to start with. On the other hand, maybe there are still plenty of cats, but your messaging isn't working and you're not able to reach people, in which case you need to double down. Now, if you're running out of cats, right, then you would just take your surgeries and move next door and start working there. But on the other hand, if your messaging is the problem, then you would want to double down on that and improve that and do that more intensely. So you're kind of at a fork in the road, and you don't know which way to turn unless you're tracking your impact. So if your goal is to lower intake, you've done 300 cats and you're seeing intake dropping dramatically, that's a pretty good indication that it's time to move on to somewhere else. On the other hand, if intake's the same or it's going up, then there are probably more cats and you need to redouble your efforts to try to find them. So it's very important for the success of the project to be able to have some metrics that you're following. Okay, before we go to Q&A, I want to also point out one other really promising development in the field that's coming out of Australia. For those of you who are thinking like, I don't have enough zip, I want to target these high need zip codes. We don't have enough surgeries. But I really want to try to address that area. There's a new concept developing called micro-targeting. And what that involves is very similar to what we talked about, but a little more precise, where you're primarily, this works if you're trying to reduce intake into the shelter. It's not necessarily an effective method for lowering the number of cats in an area, but if you're trying to lower intake or you're trying to lower complaints, it's proving to be very effective and very efficient and require far fewer surgeries than has otherwise been the case. So what you're seeing on this map is the RSPCA of New South Wales, which is in Sydney, and they took their intake data and they mapped it like this. So the orange are kittens and the yellow are adult cats and the red is where they had identified feeders. So once this was on the map, that's where they went, right? They went to these exact houses and blocks. I mean, they didn't go into the zip code. They went and they sent people, who were trained and experienced to talk to the feeders and gain their cooperation and get a high percentage of these particular locations spayed and neutered, desexed, as they call it there. And these were the results. Hold on just a moment. Looks like this slide has multiple parts. Yeah, here we go. Sorry. So this was, you can see how the average intake in the years before the project was about 283. And then over the next 2 years, it dropped by almost half. What was significant about this, because we see, you've seen this in other targeted projects that I've talked about, but they only had to alter 8 cats per 1,000 human population over the course of 2 years. And that led to this, almost cut in half the amount of intake. Now, compare that to the other studies that I talked about in Gainesville, where Dr. Levy's study was done and intake was down 66% after 2 years. They altered 127 cats per 1,000 human population. And in the University of Tampa Bay example, they had fixed 60.5 cats per 1,000. So they got similar results in Greenacre by only altering 8 cats per 1,000. So far, far fewer surgeries were required due to the fact that they pinpointed the exact people and blocks and addresses and worked on those. Again, that is not necessarily better from a number of free-roaming cats perspective overall, but it's obviously very effective when it comes to intake. And this model has been replicated elsewhere in Australia. There are projects that Neighborhood Cats has been consulting on in Queensland. And what happened was they first started doing a small town of about 3,000 people, and they did it in the traditional way, which is to saturate the area and get as many cats as they could find spayed and neutered. And they got pretty dramatic results, as you would expect, significant decline, like 60% declines in intake. But then they expanded the model to a much larger area of two suburbs, went from a population of about 3,000 people to a population of over 40,000. And they didn't have the resources to do the same quantity and volume of surgeries. So they started micro-targeting and they found that they got equivalent results to what they got in the small town with a third of the number of surgeries that they had used. So just a kind of a tip for how to use your resources most effectively when the intake or complaints are the metric that you want to see improve.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you, Brian, so very much for your time. And thank you all for attending with us today. Thank you so much, Brian. We appreciate your time and your knowledge. And thank you very much, everybody. We'll see you later.
That's it for this week. Please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave a review. We love to hear what you think, and a 5-star review really helps others find the show. You can also join the conversation with listeners, cat caretakers, and me on Facebook and Instagram. And don't forget to hit follow or subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, YouTube, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss a single show. Thanks for listening, and thank you for everything that you do to help create a safe and healthy world for cats.